Hello there, and welcome to episode 6 of James Gordon Song and Rants Man, my monthly podcast where I explore different issues through commentary, conversation, and music. And speaking of music, that's today's topic. Music has been my passion and my livelihood since, yes kids, the 1970s. As I say in my new book of road stories, The Highway and I, hey, smooth merch plug there, eh? I'm pleased to say that the money's been terrible, the driving has been endless, the food mediocre, the motels overpriced, and the glamorous lifestyle extremely overrated. I've loved every minute of it. The business doesn't owe me anything. I think I've had a reasonably successful career, even if you only measure it by its longevity. I could retire, except the biz doesn't come with a pension, and I keep writing songs, which I'm still keen to share in any way that I can. I've been around long enough to have seen some dramatic shifts over the years. I've watched the death of vinyl records, and I even put out a few 45s as well as LPs back in the day. Cassettes, CDs, gone. Back to vinyl a bit, the demise of record stores, the rise of streaming, the disappearance of many venues, what I perceive as a shift in the value society places on its artists, and much more. I'm really only qualified to speak to the little corner of the music world that I'm involved in, roots music, or singer-songwriter, or folk music, though I'm pretty sure that what we'll talk about applies to most genres. My initial assessment to get this going is that the business is in real crisis right now. I did my first tour since COVID hit this past fall, and I found that expenses were at least double and income was at least half of what it was just 3 years ago. The math simply did not work, and I'm hearing that others are having a similar experience. I have some excellent guests to discuss this with, but first, since this is called Songs and Rants, let's start with a song that kind of speaks to the matter at hand. Here's Music Was Your Lover.
Raised on rock and roll, rhythm and blues, twist and shout and blue suede shoes. You learned your trade, you paid your dues. Music was your lover. The road became your closest friend. It nurtured you, it kept you fed. You thought that it would never end. Music was your lover. When the road's the only thing you've known, it's in your blood, it's in your bones. It's hard to watch it falling apart. Your guitar's not gonna pay the rent unless you are the 1%. This broken biz is gonna break your heart. Something happened along the way. No one values your lover. Expenses have doubled and the income's half. It's so sad that you could laugh. It's a joke if you try to do the math. Still, music was your lover. When the road's the only thing you've known, it's in your blood, it's in your bones. It's hard to watch it fall. Guitar's not gonna pay the rent unless you are the 1%. This broken biz is gonna break your heart. When the rental car makes more than you, gas and airfare, hotels too, what are you supposed to do? Music was your lover. Still somehow you keep on trying. It's a hard sell when nobody's buying. It's not a living, it's more like a dying. Is it time to leave your lover? maybe if you sold your gear, you'd make it through another year. But losing that life was not what you had planned for. People still like to hear you play. It doesn't matter anyway. You can't take applause to your landlord. So say goodbye to your beloved road. You can stay home and get it as a free download. Don McLean was right, I suppose. This is the day the music died.
There you go. So my guests today are all fine comrades working down in the trenches of this zany profession. For the first half of what has turned out to be a two-part episode on this topic, we have Shauna Caspi, a great singer-songwriter, guitar player with a background in arts administration too, and Samir Bajal, the artistic director of Guelph's renowned Hillside Festival. I'm going to make this a pretty open conversation. Chime in whenever you like, but I'm going to start with asking if you agree with my assertion that the biz is in crisis, and if so, can you describe some of the challenges and changes that you're experiencing? And to set a course for this chat, eventually we'll get to solutions, ways to move forward, because there's got to be some, right? Can you start us off, Shauna?
Sure. So I'm coming to this from the perspective of a touring musician. That's what I was doing before the pandemic and what I've been doing for many years. And I'm a singer-songwriter. I live in Toronto, and I've been living in Toronto for 20 years. I make records, I write songs, but really what I do most of and what I feel I do best and what I love the most is playing live shows. And I think live music is amazing and important. And from what I've seen this past year, when live music did come back in 2022, particularly amazing summer festivals, which is my favorite thing. Those festivals were packed and people are going out to live music. I know, you know, things are still kind of in flux because of the pandemic. The pandemic still exists, and that's a challenge and will continue to be a challenge. But I really do believe that human beings want live music. And yes, we can build home studios. Yes, we can write songs and we can do live streams and all the things that musicians were doing during the pandemic to keep going. But I think the live music piece is incredibly important and really, really vibrant and really exciting and really wanted. And if that is true, then musicians who make live music have to be able to do it in a viable way and in a healthy way. And I think that's the challenge that we're having right now.
Perfect. That sets the stage for how might we keep it viable. How about things from your corner of the world, Sam?
Going into last year's summer festival, which it had been like 3 years, you know, it's like, holy moly, it has been three, you know, it's like, oh yeah, how do you do this? And you know, all these things that, you know, used to kind of do and knew how to do, and you were like, you know, after Hillside, Inside's virtual edition again, which it ended up being last year, which we were kind of thinking we might have been able to do a hybrid version, but we didn't. Next thing you know, it was like, right, okay, so we're going to do a real festival. You know, it was pretty clear, like by the end of February, you know, like it was pretty obvious that we were going to be going for a live festival, right? So that was part of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of the reason I'm saying some of this preamble stuff is because it really was like, you know, kind of like, okay, starting your engine again, right? After it's been kind of parked for a long time and hasn't been driven around the block or anything, almost everything changed. And I mean, as we moved along, it was just like, right, okay, that. Timelines changed because everything from like travel stuff started to become right. Okay, so there's like less flights available for people that know, oh no, they're changing too. And that's changing. And, you know, that's a big subject in itself. It started to become pretty apparent that, you know, the variables were like not going to follow a consistent pattern like they had in the past. And some of it, we didn't really know what it was going to look like. But I mean, generally speaking, everything cost more. We had less resources. And I don't just mean like, I'm not talking about monetary pure resources. I'm talking about less resources of what we were used to having. So tech stuff became more challenging. Staffing in this industry, and when I say staffing in this industry, I don't just mean technical staff. I mean like hotel staff. So All these different things that are connected, that, you know, like airlines, airports, all these different things that have people coming to your event. So that stuff changed and was like, you know, not as simple to just, oh yeah, it's going to work this way just fine. And, you know, like the cost of supplies, like basic supplies, like, you know, from tents to infrastructure, right? That stuff costs more. One of the things that I think most people who are in this business will tell you is that there was a huge shortage of vehicles.
Right.
You know, we dealt with a little bit of that. For sure, because usually we're used to having like rentals of vehicles that we use for like moving things around for the site and everything. So that was one thing. But anyway, and again, it costs more. So That, in a nutshell, that was it. And then really, you know, if you put it all together, it made putting on the entire event considerably more expensive.
Sure. Now, okay, if I can ask you a question about that, and I'll ask Shauna to comment on the everything costs more part. And I know that you have some insights because I've been watching your posts about car rentals and things like that. I think on my tour, the car rental made a lot more money than I did. But Sam, you managed to put on a good festival with exponentially rising costs, but the ticket price didn't rise a lot. How'd you swing that?
It was very, very careful accounting.
Right. Okay.
Like really, I mean, I owe it to the you know, our executive director and our finance committee that are incredibly meticulous. And it was like play by play.
Right.
Play by play, you know, and we ended up having very strong ticket sales.
Yeah.
You know, but we also took into account that we weren't going to jam the place because It was still like, you know, well, you know, the sensitivity about people being close together in spaces and all that stuff. So we didn't want to overdo it. And somehow the equation ended up balancing. And I think we're very fortunate. And I really count our blessings that way. And if it wasn't for a whole team of people that put their heads together and figured out How to do this thing. And I mean, I will say for the record that some of it had to be done on the fly, because just like you turn around all of a sudden, it's like, what do you mean that just happened? You know? I mean, it was happening right through to the festival weekend.
Right.
Where like artists' flights are being canceled. And next thing you know, like you've got hotel rooms booked for them. And, oh, well, we can't come until tomorrow now. Things like that. So really, I mean, I'm giving you like, you know, the honest answer here. It's like, that's really what it came down to. But that can't happen every year.
No.
You can't do that. Like, okay, we're just going to do it this way from now on. It's just like, you know, we kind of had a sense of it and the universe aligned itself properly for us and everybody worked very hard.
Right.
That's how it turned out.
Good. Shauna, you might be able to comment on this with just the concert scene. I mentioned my tour in September was on the West Coast. Because everything's going up, I don't think ticket prices in general are going up to compensate for that. So it is really hard for the venues, but there's a re-education that needs to happen, which is why I don't mind the bitching that I do about the state of the business, because a lot of the times the consumer of music doesn't know that there's all this exponential change. So I think for it to be viable, as to use your word, Shauna, there needs to be an understanding about a different value that we need to place on artists. And use an example, my very first gig on that tour, I was delighted because I didn't know what would happen. It was packed, and it happened to be that venue's first show since COVID. So they were thrilled that it was packed. And at the end of the night, I was thinking, oh, well, maybe this is all going to work. And when I got my little paycheck at the end, I was pretty surprised at how low it was. And I asked the guys about that, and they said, well, we're very proud of the fact that we haven't raised our ticket price in 20 years. And my reaction was, why are you proud of that? But on the other hand, I get it. And I wanted, maybe each of you can comment on this. Sam, your remarks were about all the changes that happened through COVID. My opinion is that COVID allowed us to step back and notice the different things that were going on. But some of the things like streaming, like Netflix, things that are keeping people home, that are changing consumers' patterns too, are having effect. And it's hard to keep up with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to speak to the ticket pricing. Ticket prices have to start going up. I mean, they're going up, relatively speaking, in different scenarios. I mean, the mainstream concert industry, they've gone way up.
Yeah,
they have. That's just sure. What I was saying. I mean, I'll tell you that we were paying more to artists than we've ever paid.
Right.
Across the board, from A to Z.
Well, that's good.
You know, like, it didn't matter which level. Like, it was like, if anything, I'll be straight up here. The place that we played, we made sure of, and it also, you know, just proved itself to be the case, was that the artists that, you know, were like not making like the higher end fees, those are the ones we were paying more to.
Huh. That's good. Yeah. Well, that's because you get it, I think. And we need more people to understand the situation. But Shauna, do you think the concert going public currently has the capacity to accommodate bigger ticket prices? Or, and this, there's a related topic with this. I often tell people, boy, it's got to change. And they'll say, well, it is changing. Look at it, cost $2,000 to go and see Taylor Swift. And as a dyed-in-the-wool socialist, I'm noticing that the music business mirrors the rest of life now, and that there's a 1% they're doing well, and the 99 are, sometimes the math doesn't work. So, Shauna.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about that. I think, I mean, ticket prices, like anything, like any service or commodity or anything in the economy, is going to fluctuate depending on where you are, who the audience is, what you're providing. I definitely agree that it's really important to have the public know the value of art and music and musicians. I definitely agree with that. And I will also say that my experience recently, especially booking 2023 and booking 2023, particularly in the United States, which I have to do very far in advance. And so I really have an idea. I know what's coming up for that. And I know what I'm getting paid at those shows. My 2023 shows are paying me more than the past.
Good.
For potentially all sorts of reasons. But I have noticed that, including festivals. You know, festival guarantees have been higher this year, and I really appreciate that. Whether or not, you know, that's the kind of trick and the balance you have to reach when you're selling anything. You know, how much can you charge for it before people aren't able to pay for it anymore, or can't, or won't. So I don't know those answers. But I have definitely experienced the careful accounting that Sam describes, and that's really how I've been surviving for a long time. What I think is really challenging now is that I'm comfortable continuing to be a careful financial person, but there's so little wiggle room now
Right.
that it's really stressful. There's nowhere for anything to go wrong. And that includes anything to do with the pandemic, which is still real. So last year at this time, when I was doing shows in 2022 and planning for those shows and planning any travel or anything around that in the early days of 2022, I was planning, like, if I was going to go out for a week, I would then leave a week off and come back home, like a buffer week, case I got COVID and could go back out again. Like, that was where my mind was.
Huh.
And so that's not necessarily very efficient. What I'm doing now, because of how frightening it is in terms of flights and how it seems like you can buy a plane ticket and not get on a flight.
Yeah.
And that's really common. Like, that's not happened to me before until what I've been hearing about this year. So now I'm going through in my head, well, how do I manage that? So if I'm going out to play a show in Alberta, do I have to fly in 3 days before? Is that what I have to plan for? And then there's an extra expense for that. So that's what I'm finding really tricky with travel right now, and how that those costs are really mounting.
Mm-hmm. But I guess back to the ticket prices are going up a little bit. I don't think it's enough. And we already questioned whether the audiences have the capacity for it. But if, say, car rental and hotels are double, you can't double the ticket price yet. So there's kind of a catching up situation that's going on. And I'm hearing from other artists that, as careful as they are, it really is hard to make it work. And I don't know solutions to that, but I think it's been hinted at. Education is a big part, like making sure everyone knows what the situation. So this is why, ladies and gentlemen, we have to charge a little more for this. There is that strange reacquainting. As Sam, you said, everything sort of started over. If we're all starting over, there's actually an opportunity for us to start, get it right. But I don't know what that is.
There's a fine line there that was tough to have made clear, in that as we went back to doing stuff again, is that there's a concern that, oh, people will be reluctant to go see things.
Yeah.
And attend things. And then on the other hand, there was like this, oh no, there's all these people there, they can't wait. So what's the balance, like, well, what's real? And I think that, what we ended up with at Hillside last year was kind of like, okay, it wasn't like insane. Like, it's like, oh my God, like, the festival just sold itself out in like a week or something, which, that happened like many years ago.
Yeah.
We went through that era for a little while, if you recall. But that was a whole different situation completely. But now, generally speaking, I think that, what I'm wondering or thinking about is like how we're going to be looking at things going into this summer.
Right.
Like what's going to be the case. And I think it's going to be even more careful of an accounting exercise, to be honest with you. Now, with regards to this ticket price subject. So, I mean, if I think of the kind of shows that you're talking about here, there's a market there that is used to and has been spoiled by not paying enough.
Right.
To go see the folk community.
Yep.
And I'm trying to not generalize here, but there's like a certain kind of capacity type of shows, where like people think that, there seems to be like this, well, it shouldn't be any more than this, and I think it's high time that sort of becomes like, yes, it does need to be more than this, there isn't like, massive extra money being made on parking kickbacks and, ticket service charge kickbacks. And there's a lot of kickbacking that goes on in this industry, but it doesn't happen there. There isn't this extra stream of revenue that's coming back and flowing back to the artist. Mm-hmm. And the promoter too, because the promoters on these shows are not like, major operations.
Right.
Most of the time.
Yeah. No, in fact, speaking to those operators, I have a lot of empathy for the promoters. So I understand. I was going to ask you, Shauna, it took me a while to have empathy for it. When I started going back to look at venues that I had been to before the pandemic, I'll give you a specific example. There was a theater just outside, a little west of Edmonton, that I played at maybe 4 years ago. And I can actually remember, I remember I got $2,500 for it. So I had kept my careful notes. I called them and I said, well, maybe it's time to think about it again. And they said, we'd love to have you. In fact, we have a good deal. You can rent the hall for $2,500. And that's a pretty common thing now. And that's because venues are struggling too. And they're, I can see why they don't want to take the risk. What if they can't make your guarantee? So they're struggling too. You'd have to be in another level than I'm on to have a street team that could rent a hall in a town that you don't live in to make that work. But have you noticed shifts like that, Shauna?
I have noticed it in Toronto. Lot of venues that were not rentals prior to the pandemic are now. It's actually, I did a CD release in Toronto this past year and found it very hard to find a non-rental situation. I will say that I am a big fan of and supporter and cheerleader for arts funding at various levels, including government levels. I think that it's very important and a good use of taxpayer dollars. And I think, and there, I mean, a lot of festivals and concert series and venues and artists get arts funding. And I, one of the things that I learned over the pandemic is the power of writing your elected officials. I'd never experienced that before. And I think it's important that if Canadians or Ontarians or wherever it is that we live think that the arts are important and want to keep seeing them exist, that they should write to their elected officials and say that they think it's important and that arts funding is important. But I know that it's not something that can be counted on all the time. And you have to be careful when you use that as a line item in your budget.
Yep.
So I feel for that. Because another thing that I'm really interested in is making live music and making art accessible to as many people as possible.
Sure.
And the higher we raise those ticket prices, the harder it is for other people to access those events. And I don't want to case people out of things either.
Mm-hmm. If I can shift topics slightly, you alluded to it. You said you did a CD release. I was talking to our mutual friend, Catherine Wheatley, the other day. We're talking about the challenges of booking the shows. She had an equation that I hadn't thought of, but I think she's right. Those of us touring artists used to, I used to have an equation where I'd say, okay, if I've got 100 people in an audience, I'm probably going to sell 20 CDs. And Catherine, she had the same equation, but she said, that's more like two now. So that really dramatically changes the math. I used to gripe to my audiences, which wasn't a very effective thing to do, about saying, come on, guys, don't just download me for free. Don't go to Spotify because it does not pay artists. A lot of the times they don't know that. But what I learned now, my attitude more is, okay, maybe you don't have a CD player. do the download. As long as you know that that does not support an artist, so you have to find other ways.
I guess I don't look like my album covers anymore, but every now and then I still get recognized. Say, hey, didn't you used to be that Kenny Ford? I say, I still am. Do you want that with fries? And if I serve you a coffee and a buttered tart in this rundown diner, you expect to pay. But if I serve you up a song that comes straight from the heart, doesn't matter if I got mouths to feed. it all away for free. They say, hey, I hear you all the time on Spotify. I tell them honestly, I really am quite thrilled. It doesn't seem to mean a whole lot if I tell them that won't really pay my bills. You want me to cry, you want me to bleed, and at the same time be the flavor of the week. Doesn't matter if I got mouths to feed. Myself saying, hey pal, you used to put a little value on what folks like me are working hard to do. We tried to raise you up out of this shit, cheer you up a little bit, give you something that was real and true. Is it too much to ask for a little back from you? Writers draw from. It takes a little help from you to fill it up. It takes a little help from you to fill it up. It takes a little help from you to fill it up.
I know you sell art too, as well, like visual art. I'm selling books now and they're doing really well, but a lot of artists are struggling to make up that gap as well. That equation has changed so much. It's harder for me to tell a venue that say, well, I used to think I'd make $400 or $500 just at the merch table, so maybe I don't need $2,500, but now I have to say that's got to come from somewhere or I can't come. And it gets pretty tricky.
Sure. Yeah. Definitely can't count on merch sales the way you could 10 years ago or 20 years ago, which is something we've all noticed over the years. But it is also, you know, nobody owes us anything. So if fans, you know, we want to give the fans what they want. So a lot of artists have been really creative coming up with different merch items. You know, people don't have CD players anymore. I don't have a CD player anymore.
Nope.
I do still sell CDs. Some people want the CDs. When I started painting and making art, I started selling postcards with download codes on them, with my art on them. And a lot of people have success with t-shirts. T-shirts are still big. People need clothes. And wearing a band's name across your chest is the best kind of advertising you can do if you're a band. And then other items, definitely books I've seen really successful, you know, things for kids, just the more creative you can get with merch, I think the better. But yeah, it's not the add-on it used to be as a source of income when you're on the road.
Right.
Which is why I think it's still kind of this piecemeal game that artists are playing where you have to put together a bunch of different things. And the more creative that you can be with that, the better. You know, some artists are doing custom songs that they write for people. Yep. Some artists are making visual art. Some artists are, you know, doing workshops or selling courses online or whatever they can do. And James, like, you're a great example. You know, you've got musicals, you've got, you know, topical songs, you've got a book. So I think we've all had to do that. but the merch table is just, it's changed, and we
right.
have to change with it.
So yeah, I think you're right, but I'm older and grumpier than you are, because part of me, maybe it's the pattern I've had for all these years, part of me goes, okay, I'm selling books, people are selling t-shirts, they're getting creative, but damn it, buy the music, you know? So if they're not buying the music from you, there's still something wrong with the equation. The merch tent has shifted at the festivals too, right? Well,
I can understand that there's challenges in terms of making sure that people buy your product. Because there's so many different ways that people access music now. I think we're in a funny time that, I mean, I'll just tell you something that might surprise you. My good friend runs what I think is one of the finest independent music stores in the region, in Waterloo, mm-hmm. in Kitchener, Encore Records. And I was in there the other week picking up my loan purchase of Record Store Day, because I'm trying to, anyway. And the place was hopping, and what were people buying? Mostly CDs. And I'm just,
wow.
I'm going, Mark, like, is this like a thing? Like, what's going on? He goes, oh yeah, the kids are buying CDs again.
Oh, wow.
It's becoming like, you know, we're selling way more CDs than we used to. They never really slowed down that much for us. It's a bit of a generalization that they actually slowed down. They did not slow down that much. CDs actually do sound better. And what he was talking about was also the records thing, the sure. vinyl records. But I'm just saying that because it actually, I've heard that a little bit more. Now, whether that's going to be a larger trend, we'll see, because, you know, but there does seem to be something said for people buying CDs. So maybe there's hope. Yeah, I think it's in flux. And it's also, you know, during this pandemic thing, online ordering went through the roof, you know,
like, right.
You know, like the people that were like out and about the most were these Amazon drivers and all these other folks that were delivering things to your house,
right.
You know, food deliveries. And I mean, there's like online ordering, right? Big time. Oh yeah. My life is, you know, I have nothing to do with, so I'm just going to spend money online, you know?
Right.
But now
right.
we're like the in-person thing. You know, yeah. So it's buying stuff in person at a show again, right?
So we have to get retrained for that, maybe.
Well, maybe, you know, like, I mean, the concept, like, I have to say that, you know, without trying to sound too nostalgic here, it's like, you know, the concept of going to the record shop and buying the music, the ritual, you
right.
know, like that whole thing, it became like, boom. And then now it's just like, well, you can just press a button. And you can download even a high resolution version of the music files, because MP3s suck, you know?
Right.
So you can, you know, for me, it was just like always like, why would you want to listen to music like this? It sounds like crap. I mean, like, they've taken all the frequencies off this thing and they shoved it through a drain pipe. Well, now you can get music as it should have been, like, you know, it should be full frequency.
Right.
It sounds like it's supposed to, but still, it's not the same. You know,
No. In fact, one of my side hustles has always been as a record producer, and my companions in that biz, it grieves them so much to know that they bust their asses to get a perfect sound, and then most people are listening to it on earbuds where you lose the top and the bottom end. but that, the economic side of that, and Shauna, you just put out an excellent album. If I have someone come to me, which doesn't happen as often now, to make a record, the first question I say is, well, let's budget backwards. How much are you likely to get as a return on this? And that would dictate how much you want to spend on it. And that didn't used to be as much of a concern. What have you noticed around that?
I have never made a record expecting that I was going to make back right. the cost of my recording,
okay.
which... when I say it out loud, it sounds like a terrible business practice. but I will also, again, mention arts funding. My last record was heavily funded by the Canada Council for the Arts, which mm-hmm. I'm extremely grateful for and made a huge difference. there was a point in time where and you know, making an album, as much as it was costing the artists a lot of money or the record labels a lot of money, the result was more of a business card than a product that was going to make you back some income. But yet a necessity, because you have to keep making records. And so I think the way that artists dealt with that is that people just started making records more cheaply, whether that was
Sure.
making them at home or making them over the pandemic, people started doing a lot more remote recordings. So you could make records with someone from all over the people from all over the world, you know, pretty cheaply, and they do sound great. But again, people should make records however they want. If you want to make a big, you know, $50,000, $100,000 record, because that's what they want to do, they should be able to do that. But I think fan-led initiatives are really crucial. So whether that's crowdfunding or whether that's Patreon, or you know, get the fans to be the engine behind what you're doing. And
Right.
I've been really amazed by that, whether that's like my crowdfunding campaign for my last record was the best it had ever been for an
Nice.
album. And besides just the security of the financial piece of that, it's that motivation and that excitement and that support that you feel from fans that I think is really great. And that's who you want to be serving. You want to be serving your
Sure.
fans. So something that happened to me recently that was really heartwarming, you know, it's great to see Spotify downloads. You know, someone might post, they were doing the end of the year posts on Spotify. I got this many million streams. I'm like, that's great. That's not what I'm getting, but that's okay. It's good to brag about whatever you can. But what really meant something to me was the connection with fans. And something that happened to me at the end of this year when I was preparing a work visa application to tour in the United States again, which you are familiar with, James.
Yeah, and they've gone up again too.
It's a complicated process, and I needed help. I needed some holes filled in
Right.
order to make this be viable for me in order to get back down to the United States. And I just put out a call to my mailing list, explaining what I was trying to do and just saying if anyone could help, here are some ways you could help. I gave them some examples. And I was so amazed and surprised and buoyed by the replies that I got from fans, people who you know, a place I had played 6 years ago that I had forgotten about, and then they're getting back to me now because they saw my mailing list post, or a fan
Nice.
saying, "Oh, I know someone who wants to do this," or "I know a place," like just the helping hands. And these were
Sure.
from real people. Like that means so much more to me than a
Yeah.
million Spotify streams.
Well, in fact, you're really good at this. I've been watching. And I think it applies to my now retired career as a politician too. This applied to that, where the biggest thing anyone can do to stay connected is to build your list, right? Just make sure at any opportunity you're harvesting names, emails, and those are people that will stay with you. However, I want to go back to something you said about the expectation that your a recording will generate the income back. Back in the old days, the pattern was always you'd make a record, you'd go out and tour to support the record, and the touring would eventually you'd pay for the record. But it's flipped, I think, now, so that you're touring, your expectation is I'm generating my livelihood from the revenue from touring, and the recording is promotion for it. However, I hear from a lot of artists that that really makes the math them struggle with that math too, because it is sort of flipped around, and it becomes this weird circle where, okay, I'm paying for this record so that I'll tour, but the touring doesn't cover it. So what's covering what? And that's been a lot of confusion for people, I think.
Yeah, and I'm always searching for sources of income because we're trying to stay alive here and trying to keep doing these things. Again, I will say arts funding is a huge part of that, especially for recordings, and then on a smaller scale for touring support. There's not as much for touring support, but it's there. And you know, whenever I make a recording, I try to think, what can I do with this? Like, what can I do with this that will generate income? And I've been really focused on sync licensing for years, but in a way that is pretty limited because I am just pitching existing recordings.
Sure.
Whereas there are artists out there who are actually writing songs and recording songs specifically for sync licensing. And in order to do that, it's really a process of volume. You got to do a lot. You got to write and record a lot of songs. So I have not seen a return on that personally, right. But that's definitely another source of income for artists. Another thing for artists that's really important is to make sure you've got all of your possible royalty collection avenues as you can.
Right.
Because you want to make sure that if your album's getting played wherever that qualifies, that you're getting back as much money as you can, and also filing all of your SOCAN forms for any qualifying live shows now that we are doing live shows again. I know that was a huge drop for me during COVID when I wasn't playing live anymore. I wasn't getting that SOCAN money anymore.
Right.
But now it's starting to happen again. So just to try to like monetize every avenue that is available.
Sure.
And yeah, I unfortunately don't have answers for
for
that imbalance of
right.
poor business practice.
Well, but you've actually hinted at another thing too. And again, this is the old guy talking. Why there was a day when folk singers, guys doing the kind of music that I'm making, that you're making, there was much more opportunity to get on the CBC than there is now. There was, you used to get on television, for God's sakes. And so I don't blame the consumer of music. The other thing has happened at the same time, that there's fewer possibilities for just getting the airplay, is that, Sam, you mentioned your friend that has a record store. That must be the last record store in the world. and it used to be that the first thing you do when you'd make a record is you get it distributed to the record stores. Those guys that are going out on their Saturday afternoons and cruising the bins would find you, and then they'd go to your show. But that's pretty well gone now too, isn't it, Sam?
I know where you're coming from here. If I'm going to take one step back from this and just speak to the one point to do with arts funding.
Sure.
There is a, and it's been going on for a long time. Like, this is, it got ramped up during the pandemic, the government really stepped up.
Yeah.
They help all of us. They help the festivals and everything, they tried to cover as many bases in the end as possible. In fact, I was amazed as to how many bases got covered. You're like, wow, really? You're doing that now too? And I'm involved with I'm part of this organization, the Canadian Live Music Association, which basically represents everything from festivals like Hillside, and like the Horseshoe Tavern, to like little things to Live Nation and Amazon Music, and it's a full spectrum of the industry, right? So it's really interesting having sitting on a board and an executive with like people that are working for those people,
right?
That's who they work for, or somebody who's we put on the Oceaga Festival, when this whole situation went down in the last few years, you're sitting there beside everybody and you're all kind of talking about the same thing and how you're really going to get through this, because it's all relative scale,
right?
The big business, because really the elephant in the room here is the big business,
right?
Okay, the big business has much more to lose, relatively speaking, in terms of like, okay, well, yeah, you're a big business, you have all this money. Well, yeah, you could also lose all this money. So And this isn't like so necessarily, I'm not talking about this from the standpoint of defending this big business, but it was like, it really became obvious to me, to a lot of us, that during this period when it was kind of like, okay, everything's like been leveled, like there's nothing going on.
Right.
So whether you're talking about filling like, an arena or a stadium or a club or a house concert, none of them are happening.
Yeah.
So when you're at that zero level, nobody's doing well, and how you're going to fill those voids of relative scale, right? So now, as we ease back into things again, the equation has changed a bit. I mean, the funding model, you know, because you guys know that, I mean, I have to tell you this, but, you know, for X number of years, there's been like Canada Council, Ontario Arts Council, you know, Factor. In this country, we're quite fortunate, you know, that there's been support for like artists and presenting bodies. They had to kind of, and then the government even had this, and Canadian Heritage, and but it got ramped up even more, right? Like, I don't know how many times over during the pandemic. So now we're coming out of this, and it is like, well, there's a concern about, well, you guys really spent a lot of money helping a lot of people, and now what's going to happen?
Like,
so we're all kind of holding our breath.
In other words, if you're, and Shauna, you would know more about this, if the funding models from government agencies is ramping up, they want, just like everyone, they want to see a return on their investment too. Is that sort of what you're saying, Sam? Like,
yeah, so now with grants and stuff. So, I mean, like, I think that, you know, to ask the blunt question is like, what if the rug got pulled out from under all of us with funding?
Right.
And I don't mean you were, I'm all of us, okay?
Sure.
Because the Hillside Festival, all the not-for-profits, I mean, nobody's kidding anybody. They all rely on this stuff, you know?
Right.
You know, what kind of a false economy all of a sudden could you be faced? You know, like, it's this whole thing of, like, it's a balancing act. I mean, you know, I'll put it this way. If you're an organization that gets piles of money and nobody really cares about what you're doing, you keep getting piles of money, there's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're getting, you know, lots of money and people care about what you're doing and they're supporting, and it's all full circle cycling economy where the money flows to everybody, you know,
right.
So you get the money. You know, we got funding during the pandemic to put on virtual programming. What was the whole point of that? Well, there was no cost to the people to watch it.
Right.
All of it was free. But where was the money going? The money was going to the artists, the people that were involved in putting the things on, right? The industry. That was the whole point. It was a really interesting time for that, because it's like, wow, we're putting on all this free programming. It's absolutely bonkers trying to program a virtual festival. Like, I almost lost my mind. It's like, what's the rules here? How does this work? There's no measuring point, you know.
Right.
But that was the thing, like that. But that's what that money did. It allowed you to have some money flow through.
Right.
I mean, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, you know, there
sure.
was, but as we move ahead now, this model that's been around for a number of years with supporting independent artists, especially, that I really hope it stays. I mean, like, I get worried. I get worried about it. The idea is that it's supposed to keep people going and allow them to. It's about the, I mean, you said it, you know, Sean, it's about the importance of the arts.
Sure.
It's actually, there's a really strong respect for the arts and culture and what it does for people's well-being, you know.
Sean, I appreciate what you said earlier related to this, where it's great that the arts funding, and I'll let you comment on whether you think it's going to stay, because you've worked for an arts funding organization. But you said it's great, and it's supportive, and it's enabling people to get out there and do what they love to do. But you said, but you can't put that in your budget line. So it's almost more like it's like icing on the cake, but you got to make the cake baked so people want to eat the cake too.
And that's exactly. Actually a conversation we have in arts funding a lot.
Yeah.
You know, this practice of kind of funding things after the fact, or, you know, you kind of go ahead with a project not really knowing if you can do it and then sort of hoping that you'll get it. That's a totally different conversation, and there's different things, you know, bigger arts organizations, probably like Sam's Festival, who get operating funding from different councils. You know, that is funding that you are expecting to get every year. What I'm kind of worried about for this coming year is what Sam mentioned about all of that emergency funding that the government was giving
right.
because of the pandemic is now passed. And so I'm a little nervous about the coming year and how we kind of did get used to that support. And it was really this flow outpouring of support financially throughout the pandemic, which is now we're not going to have it. And right. And I'm not sure what, and I think that's a conversation we're having, is like, how do we do this sustainably? How do we do this in a viable way long term?
Well, we could probably chat about this all day, as our listeners have probably noticed. I'm really appreciative about what you're offering today. Thank you very much. And I'm particularly inspired by the little sense of hope that you're both holding as we move forward. I get pretty cynical about all this stuff, so I'm grateful for that. And speaking of hope, I'm going to wrap things up with a song from Shauna, who has a song that mentions hope. Can you tell us a little about what you're going to share with us, Shauna?
Yeah, thanks. The song is called Hope Lives, and it's from my album Hurricane Coming. And a lot of the songs on Hurricane Coming were written in a very condensed period of time, and really kind of under an umbrella of a particular sound, particular feel, and particular themes. But Hope Lives was actually written before that process, and I wrote it the summer before I started making that record. And I had just done a writing residency at the Banff Center, and a lot of the writing that I had been doing prior to that was really, it's quite dark. There always was a vein of hope that ran through it, but a lot of my writing is quite dark. And in writing that song, I just remember it was summer and I was feeling good. And I remember how great it felt to think about hope and to write about something really bright and positive, and to go through the process of thinking of all the different little places that we might not expect to find hope, and how great that felt.
Nice. Well, let's hear it.
Hope lives with a letter in the mail, the porch light glow where all else fails. Hope will drive you home. Hope lives in the first sign of spring, an old habit quits and a new day. Kiss the sunrise cutting through the clouds, the gold and the gray, the heart that knows it'll come around someday. Hope lives in the fire. Dry match, the campsite in the rain. Hope will guide you back. Hope lives in a love worth saving, nerves worn thin from a long time waiting. Hope will stand at the door, but you gotta let it in. It's broken by the one that came before. We can look for more. The sunrise cutting through the clouds, the gold and the gray, the heart that knows it'll come around someday. Heart that knows.
Beautiful, Shauna. Thanks so much. So to wrap things up, I'm going to give each of you a chance to make a couple of closing remarks, and we'll get ourselves out of here. Why don't we start with you, Sam?
I think the challenges that are faced these days, to speak to the math of the reality, is that what is the challenges now that have to do with selling yourself? Because at the end of the day, you want to be able to deliver what you want to deliver without compromising your art. Just like we want to deliver our festival without compromising how we do it, you know.
Yeah,
we want it to be brought by us. It's a challenging thing to do, and I think it's important to know where your friends are. and that goes across the board. There's all kinds of people that will talk the talk, but they don't walk it.
Right.
But then there's other people that, you know, they turn around, that they believe in you, and you know, Shauna, you spoke to it in terms of like how you have gotten recognition and support from people in different communities and things like that. And, you know, I think it's important to know your audience. You know, I know that sounds really simple, but it's know your audience. And I mean, I've been forced to, it's not even forced. It's just like, it's this thing to do. It's like, well, we're not trying to sell to people that are like, we'll never get it.
Over to you, Shauna.
We can reminisce about the past and how things used to be as much as we want, but things are the way they are. And it's our job to go forward and to do what we can with what we've got and to try new things and to be creative. And so I think for artists, collaboration is really important, whether that's musically, to just do more interesting and exciting musical things, or collaborate on the business side to try to, you know, get a team of artists together to support each other if like a traditional music industry team is not what's working. And then knowing who your friends are and working with good people is really important. And one of my goals lately is to get outside my comfort zone. So that might be making music that's outside of the genre that I'm used to making music in, or collaborating with people outside of my network. I think a lot of us have been really staying safe with the people that we know, but there's this whole world of other people out there to work with that, you know, people that you don't usually notice or people who aren't as loud or as visible as folks that you see all the time, but they could be such important keys to the work that you're doing. And so I'm encouraging people to really look outside your usual networks, take risks. I love to hear that Sam has these discovery aspects to Hillside, because that's a risk, but that can have such an amazing return. So I'm glad to hear that's happening.
Mm. Okay, thank you, you two.
Thanks, James. Nice to see you, Sam.
Thanks, James.
Okay. Good luck.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for listening today, and stay tuned for part two of this exploration of the music business coming your way soon. The music that you heard today was by Shauna Caspi. You can find out more about her music at her website, shaunacaspi.com. That's shaunacaspi.com. And as always, you can find my music through my website, jamesgordon.ca, or jamesgordonmusic.bandcamp.com, if you want to do some friendly downloading. I'd also appreciate if you would consider contributing to the cause of keeping this podcast alive. And you can do that through PayPal or an e-transfer to james@jamesgordon.ca, and by spreading the word. Tell your friends. Thanks a lot.